Hi, I'm Esther.
And I'm Sean.
I write about AI news here at Tech Target in Massachusetts.
And I edit Esther's stories.
We're here to talk with tech experts about everything AI and ChatGPT.
Don't forget Google Gemini.
Whether it's who's ahead in the generative AI race, the metaverse, digital twins, or even the latest in autonomous vehicles, we've got it covered. Right, Sean?
Yep, we've got it covered.
Welcome to another Targeting AI podcast. Today, we are speaking to GitHub researcher Irini Kalyan-Vakil. Before moving to GitHub 3 years ago, Irini was a design researcher at Microsoft. Before then, she was a user researcher at the University of Victoria, British Columbia. Last month, GitHub released a report about the impact on productivity and collaboration on developer experience. Irini helped develop not only that report, but also thoughts on how developers feel about using AI for their daily workflow. So thank you so much for joining us today, Irini.
Thank you very much for having me. This is great.
I would like if you can start by discussing your research on AI and the developer. How did it come about? What were some of your key findings about ways the developer welcomed AI tools or did not welcome?
That's a big question. So I'm going to take a few moments just to like do it justice. First of all, I'll say that it's very important for us at GitHub to kind of know developers' sentiment, their motivation, their needs with regards to tools, right? We build tools to help developers. It's very, very important for us to know where they stand and how they use tools. And not only just developer tools in general, now with AI, even more so. It's research and knowledge that informs how we think, how we design solutions, how we design products, and so on. So in that spirit, we have done a lot of research on how developers use AI tools, and we're in our second years of doing that, right? So specifically, we're focusing on how developers are using the GitHub AI product, GitHub Copilot. And so what we've seen is that in the last couple of years that we've been doing research on it, it has been and still is a very kind of transformational technology. So for example, I led the original productivity research on GitHub Copilot. That was about, like, we released it about a year and a half ago. And we found there how Copilot helps developers. So it benefits them in terms of helping them complete tasks faster. You may have seen kind of like the key metric, the 55% faster task completion with Copilot. So that all came in that first wave of research, but also how Copilot helps developers stay in the flow, feel more fulfilled with their jobs, conserve mental energy. There were a lot of things. And that was a snapshot about a year and a half ago, as I said. And our most recent research that we're going to talk more about today focuses on kind of what happens after that first snapshot. In the year and a half that has gone by, AI capabilities have grown. There are more AI tools out there. Developers have gotten used to them. They've been exposed to them more. And what we're finding with this new research is that not only can AI tools do more for developers, they can help them with like whole tasks and more complex tasks and be more autonomous. We also find that developers want AI tools to help them more in more complex tasks. And there's a little bit of nuance there. So depending on how much you want to talk about it, we can start breaking it down. But we're finding that, first of all, the mindset of developers has shifted. AI tools so far have been seen like as a, you know, an efficiency tool, kind of second pair of hands. You have work that you didn't want to be doing that much, was boilerplate, repetitive, and so on as a developer, and kind of as a second pair of hands helps you get through it faster. And now we're seeing that it's more developers looking at AI as more of a second brain, kind of like augmenting their thinking, helping them lower cognitive burden, helping them tackle a lot of complexity. So there's definitely been a shift in perspective there. And as I said, developers are eager to kind of embrace AI more into their complex tasks, but not for every part, and they're not open to the same degree. And as I said, we can dig into that as much as you need.
Okay, that sounds great. But on the other side, just a little bit of skepticism with your own research, right? So you interviewed 25 full-time software engineers, 18 favorite AI tools, 7 were more skeptical. Is that just the standard inbred skepticism of the developer mentality? What was the reason for their skepticism, and what was the reasoning for the people who were more positive about AI?
Yeah. So first of all, I'll say, if I'm allowed a little bit of pride, I feel very proud that we made a point of talking with developers who kind of self-identify as skeptical, because it's an important part of what the perspective is. I opened with saying it's very important for us to understand the perspective. So the skepticism is part of that. What's the source of the skepticism? Two main reasons that we identified. One was people who were skeptical had tried AI tools to do something with them. They felt the tools are not good enough yet, right? The tools gave them inaccurate answers, they made errors, so they ended up not being as helpful as the developers originally were expecting. And the other reason, which is kind of an extension of that first part of skepticism, was that they ended up having kind of an ideological objection, right? So what they were saying was AI tools, at the moment, they cannot be trusted. They cannot give ground truths. So they cannot be trusted to be considered like accurate or infallible. So we shouldn't be using them kind of as oracles that we always assume they're right or they're never wrong. And that's important. Kind of, I think we all hypothesize that that's part of the skepticism, but it's important because it reinforces for us that it's very important to keep in mind as we design tools, but also how we talk about them, how critical it is to always keep humans in the loop, always, right? And so design principles that AI tools need to be transparent, they need to be steerable. These are top of mind things for us as we're building tools and also as we're assessing how developers are working with these tools. So making sure that developers are always in the loop, they're always in control, never mind how capable and better the tools become or more autonomous they become. These are things that we need to keep in mind and keep practicing. And so at any point, we need to be making sure that developers, they can verify whatever AI suggests to them, right? So for the current generation of tools, what that means is like as Copilot, for example, gives lines of code to developers as they're writing their own code, that is still something that needs to go through diligence. Teams, developers have had code reviews and other like practices as due diligence that have been using for their human written code. Exactly the same steps need to be taken when the code is AI generated. And then for this next generation of tools that is coming, I'm just as a parenthesis here, I'm sitting on the like innovation team at GitHub. It's called GitHub Next. So we're also thinking about building the next wave, the next generation of AI tools that leverage this like expanded set of capabilities that AI has. And still there, we're still thinking with these same principles of making it transparent, making it steerable. So we always have functionality in them that supports developers to run the code that AI is generating and is suggesting in real time, validated before it's committed, before it goes anywhere further.
You mentioned like at the beginning of like first it was kind of like developers were using the tool as kind of like a mundane task. And then you also mentioned now they're kind of using it as like a second brain. And I think that goes into the point in the research about the cognitive burden. So can you go a little bit about what that is? And then can you expand on how they're now using it as a quote unquote second brain?
There are a couple of ways. Cognitive burden in general is kind of the sense that a task is taking more mental energy than it should, right? Or than a developer is willing to invest. And there are a couple of ways that this can manifest. So one way that it can manifest is if a task is really tedious, right? So the developer cannot justify spending the time and the mental energy in a task that is tedious. It's not because the task is really difficult, but it is repetitive, it's boilerplate, it's uninteresting. They feel that it's not worth their time. This is a sort of task that is ripe for automation. And at the moment, as the kind of the second pair of hands that we were talking about, AI tools are really helping with that. They're shouldering some of the kind of more mundane, boring work. Developers are freed up to be able to focus on something that's more satisfying. The other way that developers run into this idea of cognitive burden is when a task is really challenging. Right. And developers they welcome a challenge. They can find, if a task is complex, they still like the problem solving. They find it engaging, they find it fun, they find like a good growth opportunity for them. But these tasks can become too challenging, and then it becomes an overwhelming experience for developers. And instead of being engaged in something complex and interesting, they end up being discouraged. So there are these two kind of like flavors of the cognitive burden. And that second flavor that comes in when tasks are challenging and difficult, that's where we find that there at the moment there's room to bring kind of value to developers through these tools. Right now, developers are dealing with more and more complexity, right? The software systems that developers are working on today compared to like 20 or 30 years ago are much bigger, they're more complex, and developers still have to keep everything in their brains in terms of like mental models. So what we're finding in the research when we say that it's a second brain and it helps developers with cognitive burden is they're using AI tools a lot more now to, and they want to use them more for making sense of a lot of information quickly, understanding the context, understanding what they need to do, having proposed plans of action on how to go about and what steps to take to solve a complex problem or a complex task. And that's what we are also building into kind of this next generation of AI assistants. I think, and it may help for our conversation here to say a little bit about kind of complex tasks, because a lot of the time we talk about them as they're one unit of work, but in fact, developers kind of have to, they have to go through different steps. So I mentioned the sense making, for example. Most complex tasks start with a developer needing to make sense of a lot of information and not necessarily knowing where to start. So one way that developers welcome more AI assistants when they're trying to do the sense making is, can an AI assistant parse a lot of information, summarize it for them, surface to them what they need to pay attention to? And you may have heard of this in other environments as well, right? Like, so using AI tools to summarize long emails or long documents or meetings or things like that. So the same way, there's a lot that goes on into a complex task. Sense making is one of those areas where developers really would appreciate more help from AI. And it's just doing some pre-processing for them, helping them kind of, as we said, augment their thinking. And the same with a plan of action. They would love if AI tooling comes up with, and this is something that we're building at the moment, comes up with a plan of action, a set of steps that a developer can take to complete their task, and potentially even more than one, and kind of talk them through the pros and cons of the different plans of action. And then, of course, the developer still wants to be fully in control of any decisions and any implementation after that.
I don't want to sound too negative, but one thing in the blog about AI developers is that developers aren't expecting perfection from their AI tools. And you just spoke to that. How would you say developers are dealing with some of the imperfections or limitations of the AI tools?
So I mentioned the Oracle thing, right? That the perception that AI is somehow always accurate and kind of complete in its output. And that's a perception which, I mean, there's a lot of hype around AI, so it's kind of valid that people have that perception given everything that we hear about what AI tools can do. But it is a perception, this infallibility, that fueled developers' initial expectations and their disappointment. I mentioned that the skeptics were folks that tried AI tools. They discovered that, you know, this AI tool is not even able to do basic arithmetic correctly, right? And so the level of trust goes down and the expectations are not met and there's disappointment. So that's the perfection that was expected at the beginning, and that expectation was not met. Again, that was a year and a half ago. And so a year and a half later, today, developers have been exposed to AI more. They have a much better understanding of what it can and cannot do. And so their expectations are calibrated, which I think is what kind of mitigates that expectation of perfection and the the different mindset that we see right now. So developers now have spent time with AI tools. They understand what they can and cannot do. They know that they are subject to errors. They have accepted that, and they are finding the right ways to use AI tools given that. So they have seen that, for example, if you use appropriate prompting appropriately, you can steer and you can nudge the AI tools to provide helpful answers. Even if the answer is not 100% correct, it can still be helpful for them, which was kind of like a revelation for us also when we found that kind of nugget in our research a year and a half ago. But we keep finding, and so in the research now, people were saying that they use, you know, they have their little prompting strategies. They start from something, asking for something very general, and then gradually they refine their prompts and to make it more specific as a way to get to what they need. And so when I say that they're not expecting perfection, is that they've accepted that they're not going to be getting correct and accurate answers all the time. But one, they can do something about that, right? They can use these prompting strategies and get to gradually teach the tool to give them appropriate for them output. And then they're also trying the AI tools in cases and in scenarios where accuracy matters a lot less. More and more we're hearing developers using AI tools for brainstorming, for example. And when we're brainstorming, even if someone gives us, like, we're looking for food for thought to move our thinking forward. And so even if someone says something that is technically incorrect or kind of inaccurate, it doesn't really matter because the brainstorming process is such that even if it's not accurate, it's still helpful.
Okay, a quick follow-up. I noticed I was really intrigued by your saying that you start with prompts that are general and go down to more specific, which is just how we do it with text generative AI. When we're looking for information or visuals and multimodal or whatever. And so we're not developers, we're journalists. I just want to clarify for the audience and for me, how developers use it. Do they use like text prompts, or is it coding prompts? Like, do you say GitHub Copilot, can you write code to do this? Is it like that, or are you using chunks of code in your prompts?
So you can do both. GitHub Copilot supports what we call auto completion, right? So as a developer is writing lines of code, Copilot suggests more lines of code. And so every line that a developer is writing is essentially a prompt. It might not be necessarily in English, although a lot of the time it's not a natural language, although more and more it is, because developers can write it as a comment. And then if they describe what they are trying to do in a comment in plain English, they can start getting generated code from Copilot. So in the completions, they write code and the code becomes the prompt that the tool then reacts to and generates something. But Copilot also has a Copilot chat version, right, where there's a separate panel and there things are more conversational. And so in that case, it's like the other way that you described it, where you're asking for something to be explained or to generate something that does XYZ things. And then it's more of prompting in text and getting something back in terms of code.
I wonder, you mentioned basically the skepticism having to do with having to refine your prompting, right? And so my question is it that it was at the start of generative AI that they kind of felt like this problem? Or have there always been a problem with, like, for those who are skeptical with like AI in general, like as AI in general, not generative AI, as the previous version of AI, has it been helpful for developers, or have they not tried it before then?
I think so. The skepticism that we saw, I think it's a matter of exposure over time and understanding what a tool is good at and what it's not good at. So as I mentioned, like, it's at the beginning, just even by the term artificial intelligence, I think it raises the expectation that this is something that is intelligent, therefore it is always correct. And I think the interactions that people had at the beginning with AI tools is they were asking factual questions to which they were expecting factually correct answers, right? And that makes perfect sense, especially since a lot of, you know, interactions, especially after the launch of ChatGPT, were conversational. And one type of conversation that we're all used to is when I ask a question that I don't know the answer to, but I believe someone else does, and I'm expecting to get a correct answer in response. But that's not how, like, it's generative AI, meaning it's generating what it thinks is more probable to come next based on the large language model that it is using and how it knows language is used typically. And so that's, but you can only know that once you start working with the tool and you realize that, for example, for a series of questions, it's just not giving you anything helpful. And then for a different set of questions, or if you ask it again, or if you clarify the way that you ask, it does start to give you something that is closer to what you needed. So I think that that exposure and that kind of calibration, which developers actually brought up in the interviews, they were saying like they are adapting the tools to their users, but they're also adapting to what the tool can and cannot do. And I think it kind of starts to close the gap between the kind of like the original expectation that turned into skepticism and the a more like useful adoption of these tools now that developers have a better sense of what is it that they do and cannot do well.
It's pretty interesting. Your methodology reminds me of almost like journalism. You're researching and interviewing people, trying to come up with some useful guideline that can help others. But anyway, that's a sideline. So what do some of your findings mean for enterprises who are using developers to create software platforms and systems and processes? But what about end users using AI? So what about, so in other words, like what did you find as far as developers and end users, or did you not include end users in your study?
So in this case, developers are the end users because we're looking at coding tools. And so developers are the end users of that. And it's interesting that you bring up the enterprises and the organizations, because the enterprises and organizations are the ones that make the decision to include this tool into their developers' work. But they're not actually users. So like a decision maker in an enterprise that decides whether they're going to roll out Copilot is usually not the person that is going to end up using it. So you're bringing out a kind of like a differentiation between these two groups. So the question is kind of what do these findings mean for enterprises and organizations that have developers and they are also using these tools? And I think as far as I can see, it's kind of great news. So we're talking about all the findings that we have, and we're starting to piece it together from different studies that we have run. Everything that we've seen is that what we're really talking about is developers using these AI tools. And as a result, they're able to focus on more engaging work. They're able to complete work faster. They're able to stay in the flow. And we know that these are things that are core to what we call the developer experience, right? The developer productivity, developer happiness, but also the developer experience, which started becoming DevEx, starts becoming like a core issue that now the tech industry is really interested in. So we have also done some research recently into developer experience and kind of how it relates to business outcomes. And so what we found, for example, is that when developers have time to do deep work, they feel 50% more productive when they're in work, they're doing work that they find engaging versus boring. They feel 30% more productive. And these are things that AI tools can bring, because we have done the research previously. What we know that when using GitHub Copilot, developers are able to focus on more satisfying work, or that they are able to stay in the flow. So it starts these two worlds of research, the one on developer experience and the one in AI tools, start coming together, which I think is a really like a very virtuous cycle at the moment, because it means that enterprises can actually bring two great results into their organizations. One is to have the productivity and the happiness of the developers, but also through that and through improving the developer experience, they're able to get better outcomes for them. Like, we found connections to outcomes like innovation, retention, profitability. And this is something that we're also hearing from enterprise customers that have adopted. So I'll keep talking about GitHub Copilot because that's the one that we know the most. And so large enterprise customers that have adopted Copilot, that they've rolled it out company-wide, and they find things like, for example, their code reviews are completed faster, right? Which shortens the feedback loops, which is really core to developer experience. Their code quality is higher. They have fewer security vulnerabilities. There is a very virtuous set of circumstances that is happening at the moment for enterprises that decide to adopt AI tools.
That was actually going to be like my next question about your, I guess, developer experience. How did AI help or not help with good developer experience? But you were also talking about satisfying work. I think that might be the terminology you use. What do developers find satisfying, and what do they tend to like give to the AI, so to speak?
That connects to what we were saying earlier about kind of the where the cognitive burden lives, right? So far, a lot of what AI tools are really good at, and like Copilot has been adopted in that way, is boilerplate and repetitive tasks. And that always looks a little different depending on the developer, the stack that they're using, the kind of work that they're doing. So like one example that we've heard that is not going to apply to everyone, right? Like Copilot is really good at, like, people use it to do like database migrations, which are the kind of task that you kind of have to do, but you also, it happens often enough that, you know, you have to deal with it. It is repetitive, but it doesn't happen that often that you just like automatically know what to do and you don't have to think about it. So it's kind of a task where you have to stop what you're doing, you have to remember, or you have to go somewhere to look. And so it creates that sort of kind of context switch that is really detrimental to developers. Every time that happens, that's an interruption that takes them out of the flow state. And it's just something that really hurts their productivity and their sense of making progress. And on the other side of things, satisfying work means something that is engaging for developers, even if it is challenging. It's not overwhelmingly so. And it is something where they have to solve a problem. It's not just rote memorization of syntax, or like, I just have to type it out the right way. It is something that involves implementing some business logic, for example, right? The idea that there is some problem solving that needs to happen that eventually will turn into code. And that's the kind of like the next wave, I think, of AI tools will need to be able to help with that. All that mental processing the developers need to do to make sense of information, to plan out how to deal with a large complex task. These are the kinds of things that make the work satisfying, but developers are open to getting more help with.
I wonder if you can just explain a little bit. You did the research on AI and developers, and then you moved into like developer experience. How did the second research kind of come about? Was there something that you were hearing a little bit?
Yes. There was a very practical reason that we did that research, and that's because I mentioned earlier that developer experience has started becoming more a mainstream concern, let's say, for organizations, right? They have heard that developer experience is really important. So they're entertaining conversations of how do I go about improving the developer experience? What even is the developer experience? And so the work that we did was specifically targeted towards helping those conversations move forward, because developer experience is an investment, right? Like, an organization, to be able to do any, like to launch any improvements, will need to take time and energy to understand what the current developer experience is, find ways to improve it, put resources towards that work. And so it is an investment. And as an executive, as a leader, you have to weigh one investment against many others. And that's where usually we saw the conversations around developer experience stop, when executives and leaders would want to know, what can I expect to get back for as a return, essentially, of this investment that I make in developer experience. And although it's like from a very intuitive sense, everybody would agree that improving the experience of developers makes them happier, focuses them, makes them more productive. Therefore, as an organization, you can expect better outcomes down the line. We didn't have data to back that up. And that's where like the conversations usually stop. So the very practical reason that we did that research was because we wanted to measure and start having kind of real world evidence and data that we can then bring back to engineering leaders and so on when they ask the question of what can I expect to get in return of investing in developer experience.
Great. So before I ask my serious question, I have a half serious comment. I'd suggest based on our own developer experience at TechTarget that beer and caffeine improve the developer experience as well, like really analog, you know. But anyway, when we talk about AI now, we're also talking about regulation, even if it's just internal governance, guardrails, safety, AI safety, accuracy, unbiased algorithms. How do developers, how are they thinking about these issues? And they do does that go to the trust of the AI tool if right governance in place?
I think that's a great question. And honestly, it doesn't come up often enough. So let me first say that it's everyone kind of in this equation, right, is committed. That should be our starting point. They are committed to being responsible and ethical. So developers want to do things right. Organizations want to, like, they care deeply about things like regulation and compliance and so on. And GitHub and other tool vendors and platform companies, we have, I'll just speak for GitHub because I know what we have. We have a very long and detailed responsible AI review for everything that we release. And GitHub also has recently launched a Copilot Trust Center. So it's a place with a lot of information. It complies with all sorts of regulations. And it's kind of a thing that has brought a lot of enterprise customers a lot of peace of mind just by existing and being a central place for anything trust related. So with that out of the way, that like everybody's trying to do the right thing, I think that generally, as organizations adopt AI tools, it will be critical that not only do the tools fit the developer workflows, which is very important, right? Because that's the only way that tools are ever helpful. They have to fit how people work, but that they're also compliant and they're also ethical, and they're that by default and by design, so the developers don't have to worry about that in their day-to-day work, right? So the way that Copilot ended up being adopted in enterprises was very organic. It's very typical for developer tools, I have to say, but it was very organically from the individuals to the enterprise, right? So individual developers started buying Copilot and using it for themselves, finding it very beneficial, and then going to the workplace and say, you know what? I'm using this tool. I feel that it makes me more productive. I have a much better time completing my work doing, like, using this tool. Can we look into acquiring? And then developers had that question of, like, is this something, though, that we can adopt in the organization? Is it compliant? Is it ethical? And so on, which kicks off a conversation that is led by the organization. So the developer should not have to worry in their day-to-day work about whether a tool is compliant, whether it is ethical, and so on. That needs to be taken care of separately and before. So we work very closely with organizations to make sure compliance and responsible AI practices are followed and they're in place. We also ensure that Copilot works with their own data and with their own workflows while still like staying true to all the regulatory frameworks. It's the sort of thing that we discover step by step what the right way to do it is, because sometimes we're breaking ground in how like software is created and where the new tools fit in, and the technology is evolving and it's evolving so quickly. So it is really exciting to be able to break ground like that and to be able to do it responsibly and ethically. And I think you're absolutely right. Regulation is key, and it should not be the concern of the developer the tools need to be by default ethical, and that has to do with how they're created. So it's like responsibility that we have to take on. Yep.
Yeah, that's a good point. Just to wrap up, you are part of the innovation team. Obviously, you mentioned that earlier.
Yep.
So what are some of the things that we can expect, or you're kind of in the works for 2024 that you're seeing or you're very excited about when it comes to AI?
Yeah. So first of all, I'm just going to put it in there because it's easy for people to just like go to a link and see all the information. So the team is called GitHub Next, and we have our own like little corner website, which is githubnext.com. And that's where you can find information about who we are and what we do and kind of like all the latest and greatest projects that we're working on. So I mentioned the idea of AI tools being a second brain for developers. And I think the biggest manifestation that we have in the works right now is one of our projects that is called Copilot Workspace, which is a tool that is designed to help developers complete whole tasks. And so to take them from starting a task with like a minor description of this is what this task is about and what I'm trying to do, and kind of step by step working, the developer working with AI kind of in partnership to go from that to the code that they're going to write at the end that's going to be committed and then reviewed by the team and then is going to become part of the whole code base. There are a lot of steps in that process. As I mentioned, like going through a complex task has a lot of things going on. And so Copilot Workspace is built with a lot of these principles that I mentioned in mind. Like it's always transparent about what it is doing. It is always steerable. It helps make sense of what the task is. It proposes a plan. It starts, if the developer wants to implement the plan, it starts implementing it. It suggests code. They can verify, they can validate, they can run it real time to see if it works before it goes any further. And we're just very excited about that because it's kind of like a bridge between I had an idea and like a task that came with that, all the way to I implemented my idea, and kind of shorten not only the time that it takes, but also kind of lower the kind of the activation energy that sometimes just to get started with something and having to do all the thinking that goes into how do I approach is, you know, necessary, but the bar is high. So if we can lower the cognitive burden of getting started with the task and give developers kind of like a partner along the way to help them that kind of make the path easier to tread, that's something that is making us very exciting about how tools can be used next.
Thank you so much. Sean, do you have any final question?
No, I don't. But I just want to thank you so much for joining us. And you do a great job of explaining in human terms what developers do and how AI works. So
thank you. You mentioned earlier you're not a developer, you're journalists. And I will say I'm also not a developer. I'm a researcher. I've spent a lot of time studying developers and how they work and the tools that they work with and so on. That's still different than being a developer myself. So yes, I appreciate the comment, and I'm just saying we're the same in that respect.
You probably know Python and C++ though.
Sorry?
You probably know Python though.
I took some courses in the past because I needed to pass exams. Again, that's not the same thing.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And to our listeners, please feel free to connect with Irini on LinkedIn, as well as for this podcast, just leave a review or leave a rating for us. We will appreciate it. And we will see you next time on the Targeting AI.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.